40 greetings and happy Friday to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Let's kick off with African club football. Super Sport United of South Africa will host defending champion TP Mazembe of the Democratic Republic of Congo Saturday in the decisive second leg of the CAF Confederation Cup final. Mazembe won the first leg 2-1 at home in Lubumbashi, where the proud Congolese club got goals from the Malian Adama Traore and the Ghanaian Daniel Ni Adje. And Mazembe has a right to be proud. It's been one of the most successful African clubs over the years, having also won 5 titles in the CAF Champions League, Africa's premier club competition. For its part, SuperSport United will try to rally from that 2-1 deficit and win its first continental title. The game will be played at Lucas Moripe Stadium in Pretoria, named after a former star local player who's been described as one of South Africa's greatest ever footballers. From Pretoria, let's go southwest to Bloemfontein, where South Africa's Supreme Court of Appeal on Friday increased former Olympic athlete Oscar Pistorius's jail sentence for killing his girlfriend to 13 years and 5 months.
The order reads as follows. 1. The application for leave to appeal is granted. 2. The appeal against sentence is upheld. 3. The sentence imposed by the court of call in respect of murder is set aside and substituted with the following. The respondent sentenced to imprisonment for a period of 13 years and 5 months. Hereby hand down the judgment.
Justice Legwabe Willie Sariti handed down the judgment on Friday. Prosecutors had argued that Pistorius's original sentence of 6 years was, in their words, shockingly lenient. Pistorius was imprisoned in July last year after being found guilty on appeal of murdering his girlfriend, Reva Steenkamp, on Valentine's Day 2013 in a case that attracted worldwide interest. Pistorius was not in court for Friday's ruling, where he was given the minimum 15-year sentence prescribed for murder in South Africa, minus time he's already done. Steenkamp's family welcomed the decision and said it showed that justice could prevail in South Africa. More African football news. Kenya's new Belgian coach, Paul Put, is confident he can lead the Harambee Stars to the 2019 Africa Cup of Nations tournament in Cameroon. The 61-year-old Put says he submitted a list of recommendations to the Football Kenya Federation. Among them is bolstering the technical bench with some Belgian assistant coaches.
I did also my homework. I'm from Belgium, and you have 3 players who have been playing in one team in Belgium, who are playing now for Tottenham and for Cercle Brugge and for China. So I know a little bit. If you are 12 years in football, if you're playing Africa Cup of Nations, then you know also a lot of information, you receive a lot of information. So I'm quite good informed. Of course, I don't know the local players. So please give me also the time to get in the job.
I'm sure Paul Put is also hoping to see Kenya's world ranking rise. In the monthly rankings released Thursday by FIFA, World Football's governing body, the Harambee Stars were 29th in Africa and 111th overall. That's down 9 places from October. World Cup-bound Senegal is the highest-ranked team in Africa. The Lions of Teranga from Senegal are 23rd overall, their highest-ever position in the FIFA rankings. Senegal's climb comes after the team secured its first World Cup place since 2002, when the Lions of Teranga reached the quarterfinals in their debut appearance at football's premier event. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Just ahead, I'll take a look at some of the early season leaders in the National Basketball Association. Basketball news now on the VOA. The NBA resumes its regular season schedule later Friday night with 10 games. In one of the contests, the Boston Celtics will host the Orlando Magic. On Wednesday night, the Celtics saw their 16-game winning streak come to an end in Miami, Florida. That's where the Miami Heat beat the Celtics 104-98. Boston's winning streak has propelled the Celtics to the best record in the NBA, 16 wins and 3 losses. The Houston Rockets have the NBA's second best record, 14 victories and 4 defeats. Rockets guard James Harden, still sporting my favorite beard in basketball, is leading the NBA in scoring right now, averaging more than 31 points a game. Harden is also leading the league in assists, averaging almost 10 each game. And James Harden is also leading the NBA in most three-point baskets made, 77. Taking a quick look at the other NBA statistical leaders, Andre Drummond of the Detroit Pistons is the top rebounder, averaging 15.3 rebounds per game. The young Latvian giant Kristaps Porzingis of the New York Knicks is the NBA's top shot blocker right now. Porzingis is averaging 2.3 blocks per game. And still on the defensive side, Paul George of the Oklahoma City Thunder leads the NBA in steals per game at 2.6.
Hi, I'm Francis Tiafo. You're listening to Sunnyside of Sports on Voice of America.
Turning to tennis, American player Francis Tiafo recently visited our VOA headquarters here in Washington. The 19-year-old Tiafo is at number 78 overall in the ATP rankings released earlier this week. Francis says he hopes to break into the top 30 in 2018. And on that note, Francis Tiafo has been using the hashtag #BigFoeOnTheComeUp in his social media postings this year. In this encore Sunny Side of Sports presentation, let's listen in again to a chat my colleague Andrew Palcheski and I had with Francis Tiafo. And it begins with me asking Francis, what does that hashtag mean to you?
Well, Big Foe is my nickname. A lot of people call me Foe, but you know, some people call me Big Foe, so that's pretty much a nickname. And then, I was joking around once and decided to put On The Come Up at the end, and it sounded cool and it flowed. So, I've been using it on Instagram, Twitter, everything. So, pretty much just means, you know, just me on the come up, me trying to just, you know, just keep going and just try to reach the top.
I like it. On the come up, does that sort of symbolize how you're a rising tennis player in the USA?
Yeah, it symbolizes a lot of things. You know, I've, you know, started from, you know, pretty low, and you know, now I'm, you know, I've been on the come up since the beginning. So you know, and I'm still on it just because I've been rising. Doesn't mean it's gonna stop. So yeah, that's what pretty just reminds me I still got a long way to go.
Francis, as one of these up-and-coming Americans, how do you feel about the perception that many people say American men's tennis is in a slump? Does that put added pressure on you as a young American player, or is that maybe a motivator to move up and do well?
I think everyone says American tennis has been on a slump, blah, 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 but we also hit a generation where, I mean, it's possibly the best generation in tennis, with Novak, Roger, Rafa, Murray. These guys, they just have a million slams, just those four. It's been tough for anyone to really break through. So I wouldn't say that American tennis has been bad at all. I mean, I think we have a ton of great guys coming through, and we'll see how we all turn up. I think we all push each other every day and all very supportive of each other. So I think we have a great crew that can easily run the sport of tennis.
Francis, you mentioned Roger, and I know you had that great five-set match with him earlier this year. Can you talk about that and how it has affected your career? Has it boosted your confidence?
Yeah, that was a heartbreaker, but yeah, I mean, I took a lot of positives from that for sure. I played unbelievable. Put myself in a position to win against, arguably the greatest player of all time. And, I've been playing with some really good tennis. I'm really excited for next year. I think next year is going to be a really big year for me as far as, breaking through and taking the next leap in my career as far as, a top player on the tour.
One of the exciting things this year is you played world team tennis for the Washington Castles, which is your hometown world team tennis team. You grew up just outside of Washington, D.C., what was that experience like, and how did it help you this season, especially playing in front of such a positive crowd? And I have to ask you, too, what's it like having your own bobblehead?
That whole week was great. Mark Hine, puts an unbelievable event on. Treats the players great. Everything around is great. The atmosphere is, better than any. So being there was unbelievable, and I'm going to do that for many more years for sure. Having my own bobblehead the final night was unbelievable. a lot of people went and got it, so I hope I could live up to that, and hopefully people want to buy many more bobbleheads down the stretch.
World team tennis, Francis, maybe not as high stakes as life on the ATP tour. Can you tell our VOA listeners what it's like to before a big match against somebody like Roger Federer, what is it like in the locker room before you go out on the court against someone of Federer's status?
Yeah, I mean, obviously you got nerves, you got a lot of things going through your head, and obviously you know the crowd's going to be packed, the crowd's going to be against you, he's a fan favorite pretty much wherever he goes. But, I mean, at the end of the day, it's just another match. There's a tournament every week. There's a chance to make a dent every week. So, you don't want to make a situation bigger than it needs to be. Just go out there, give your best stuff, and respect everyone and fear no one. That's pretty much one of my big mottos. And, because at the end of the day, they're trying to do the same thing as you, and that's win. So, give your best stuff and just leave it all out there.
When you're approaching a match, and I'm sure you must have some friends on the tour. Are you talking with them beforehand? I mean, if, say, you're going up against somebody like Jack Sock, would you talk to him before the match? Maybe, hey, what did you have to eat last night or something like that? Or, more casual conversation? Or is it you're just focused on the match at hand?
Yeah, I mean, me and Jack's probably one of my best friends on tour, him and Kyrgios, and a lot of the younger guys. A lot of guys on tour, pretty to themselves, pretty locked in 24/7, not much personality going on with them, but they're there for a job and I respect it. But I'm a pretty laid back guy, and a lot of the guys that will talk to me before I play, I will. If they don't, then that's also fine. But for me, I'm usually with my team and just keep it relaxed, keep it chill, not too serious, and then as it gets closer to it, try to lock it in and go over the game plan and just try to get ready to rock.
You're one of these young players who's very active on social media. How does that play into your game? Does it help you to stay grounded and connect with fans? Is it just another thing that you have to deal with and work on in addition to your play? How does that fit into your life?
I just try to be as real as possible on social media. I'm not doing it for the fans. I just want to put out there who I really am. Not just trying to impress anyone. Just putting up stuff that I think is fun and showing people that I'm just like them. I just know how to play tennis, and that's pretty much it.
Francis, little history lesson here. The Voice of America is celebrating the 75th anniversary of its very first broadcast. We broadcast all over the world, including Sierra Leone, where your parents are from. And before we came in the studio, you mentioned how you visited Sierra Leone. Do you have memories of that trip?
Yeah, about 10, 11 years ago, but yeah, I do. I mean, it was unbelievable to see that, to see where my parents really grew up, everything they had to go through to get through the States and blah, blah, blah. But yeah, I mean, I was happy I got to see that. You know, it was good for me and my brother to be in that environment. Just remember that, you know, having life in America is a great opportunity, and you never take that for granted, and respect everyone, and you know, just values go a long way. So we learned this so many. I can go on and on how many lessons I learned from that trip, and that made me a better man today. And I'm always gonna remember that. So, but yeah, I plan on doing many things for that country down the stretch. Obviously, I work towards that. You know, you play for way more than yourself. It's bigger than tennis. You know, trying to inspire kids there. You know, kids all around in the States. So that's what I'm trying to do.
What about Davis Cup? Is that part of your plan of, you know, playing for your country?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, you know, I would obviously love to hold a Davis Cup trophy. I think those events are huge. You know, we get a good team behind us, and we get a win. That'll be huge for American tennis. Obviously, stop the doubt with American fans and saying that, you know, this, that, and the other. But yeah, I mean, whenever my ranking is high enough, I'll definitely be on Davis Cup ties, that's for sure.
2017 brought you a lot of great moments. It's the highest your ranking has been so far, and very early in your career. You went those five sets with Roger Federer. You beat Alexander Zverev at the Cincinnati Masters. What are the goals for 2018? Obviously, you want to win, but are there any particular tournaments you're looking at, or maybe a specific number that you want to be at as far as rankings?
I want to be around in the 30s, if not top 30, by the end of next year. I'm, 70-something now, and I think, I think when I'm playing my best, I can beat anyone. I feel comfortable playing anyone on tour. There's no match I walk into that I don't think I can win. But yeah, I mean, the Pacific tournaments I'm going to look at is slams, trying to go in the second week of slams and the thousands. I mean, every event, every week is big, but the bigger events, I really want to make a dent there, because I've beaten Zverev, he's three in the world, and I've had a ton of great matches against high caliber players. So again, those big events are where a lot of money is, and where obviously a lot of points are. So that's where you want to peak.
Anything you would like to say to our listeners in Sierra Leone or across Africa?
No, that's really just I'm out here, competing for you guys every day in, day out. Putting in day in, day out for you guys, and I plan to do many things for you guys, so keep following me, and I'll be putting in for you guys.
Francis Tiafo, thank you for visiting with us at VOA.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Joining us once again on the show is Andrew Palcheski, the VOA's social media reporter. Sporty greetings, Andrew.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Good to be with you, albeit remotely, but good to be with you in spirit there in Studio 22 and on the phone with you from New York.
As we look back to our last chat, Andrew, I think I should begin by asking you, how were the roasted Brussels sprouts?
They were excellent. The whole spread, turkey, stuffing, Brussels sprouts, all of that kind of stuff was quite good. And it was quite nice to be at home with family, seeing everybody and enjoying that great food.
Yes, it is a great time, the Thanksgiving holiday here in the USA, Andrew. Let's turn our attention to the sports world. What's trending out there?
Well, as we talked about the other day, sports and Thanksgiving are very closely linked in the United States. Every year it's tradition that the Dallas Cowboys will play on Thanksgiving, as well as the Detroit Lions. And now they've added a third late-night game to the mix, which last night was the New York Giants against the Washington Redskins right there from Washington, D.C. So you see a lot of sports connections to Thanksgiving as a holiday, and not just on the field. You see a lot of sports connections with athletes giving back. You have a lot of cases where athletes are going out into their communities where their teams are located so they can give away turkeys or serve meals to the homeless. And this stretches from the professional level through college athletes and even down to the high school level. You see a lot of school-age children even participating and giving back in ways during this holiday. So those athletes are very thankful for the, you know, physical prowess that they have, all the things that have been given to them. So they are giving back to their communities to kind of pay it forward and be thankful. One athlete that we've been talking about quite a lot on the show is Colin Kaepernick because of his NFL protests. And he was actually at a rather unusual Thanksgiving event yesterday. He was at something called an un-Thanksgiving celebration. It was at the Alcatraz prison in San Francisco, and he was there with a number of Native Americans, indigenous people to the United States, talking about the injustices that they face, because that is one element of Thanksgiving that does get talked about, that the pilgrims, when they came to the United States, conflicted and fought with the Native Americans, and many people say that the Native Americans were in the U.S. first and that they were the people that got displaced from their lives by these pilgrims coming to the U.S. So Colin Kaepernick making a lot of waves at this event, some people saying that it fits with what he's already been doing with social justice, but a lot of other people saying that it's not a great way to celebrate the Thanksgiving holiday. He could have done other things to give back, maybe to his community as he's done in the past, instead of going to this un-Thanksgiving celebration.
Still with Kaepernick, Andrew, the National Football League season, I think we're about 10 games into the regular season. What's your sense? Do you think at this late stage an NFL team would pick up Kaepernick or sign him, I mean?
I think it'd be surprising at this point because the teams are so late into the season. I think they already have their playbooks down. They have backup quarterbacks. The teams that have needed a quarterback have been able to find one, whether through their own system, team system, or through trades. I don't think at this point he would get picked up. He could get picked up next season, and I think a lot of that depends on how these protests continue and if they continue on into the off season. I would say, you know, never say never. Nothing is out of the question, and certainly Colin Kaepernick getting picked up by a team is not out of the question. Although I would be surprised to see it happen this year.
What else is trending on this Friday, Andrew?
Well, 35 days later after it all began back in October, the Boston Celtics have lost their first game in 16 games. Their win streak of 16 games comes to an end at the hands of the Miami Heat. Lots of talk about how great this win streak was for Boston, not just to put them ahead as the lead leaders in the NBA, but really to give them a boost and momentum to continue this trajectory upward. Of course, they've gone to the Eastern Conference Finals in the past few years. They're hoping that they can get over that hump and beat the Celtics and finally get to the finals. But it's been quite a ride. And Boston fans are, even though they're sad to see the win streak end, are pretty pleased that they've done so well. They said that one person I saw on social media said that they can't remember a time when they were screaming at the TV and jumping up and down and this excited in November for an NBA season that goes until May. It's, you know, 6-7 months out from the NBA finals, and fans are really into it. So it was nice just for the Boston fans, but also just fans of the NBA generally to see that run. So we'll have to see if Boston now can regroup after that loss, maybe go on another tear, another, you know, 14, 15, 16 win streak. It's the fourth longest in NBA history. So we'll see. Maybe now at least they have another record they can point to and say, hey, we want to best that record. We want to do even better. So we'll see if they can do it.
Andrew Palcheski, the Voice of America's social media reporter. Thank you, Andrew.
Thanks, Sonny, and have a good weekend.
And that wraps up the November 24th edition of The Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Mr. Chung. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA Sonny Young in Washington. Have a nice weekend, everyone. And that's The Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it. Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
For too long, Somalis have suffered an unceasing campaign of terrorist violence. Since the beginning of the year, terrorists have perpetrated over 40 attacks of terrorism using armed suicide assaults, truck bombs, and remotely detonated improvised explosive devices in Mogadishu alone. And then, in mid-October, the most devastating attack in Somali history took place. On October 14th, the streets of Mogadishu's Hodan district were jam-packed with traffic and bystanders when a truck loaded with explosives detonated, killing at least 400 people and wounding hundreds of others. Shortly thereafter, a second, smaller explosion, believed to have been part of a coordinated plot with the first attack, took place across town. The attack was our 9/11, said General Bashir Abdi Mohammed, the deputy commissioner of the Somali police force. No Somali was untouched. The Somali public, outraged by the brazen attack on innocent civilians, have voiced their demand for peace and justice in their country. One element working to turn the tide in Somalia's fight against terrorism is its joint investigative teams, elite Somali police force units that investigate terrorist attacks and gather evidence to identify the perpetrators and prosecute them. Set up with the help of the U.S. Department of State in 2014, they have responded to over 250 major incidents, systematically collecting and analyzing evidence that has been used to identify terrorist perpetrators, their networks, and bring them to justice. Through their hard work and dedication, the joint investigative teams are changing the public's perception of the police. The joint investigative teams are poised to take on one of Somalia's most pressing problems, that is, effectively preventing terrorist attacks. This means that the next step, said Deputy Police Commissioner Mohammed, is to become increasingly proactive with a police force that is capable of detecting and disrupting plots before they are executed. The United States is proud to have had a hand in the formation of these police units, and we will continue to support their efforts to further build critical counterterrorism capabilities. We stand with the people and the government of Somalia in their commitment to defeating terrorism, ensuring the security of their people, and rebuilding their country. We look forward to continuing our cooperation on these and other issues.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in. You will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
Hello. This is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Hi, this is Lori London. Tune in to the Voice of America's newscast. Every hour, on the top of each hour, 24/7. Listen to our news and correspondent reports from around the world. VOA is your trusted source for news and information.